Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m. We are also archived at richarddugan.com. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we encourage you to check out our website and check out the link to our guests' websites as well. A lot of information there for you, and we encourage you to investigate what they have to say. We don't reinvent the wheel at the website. We send you to the place where the wheel was created for that particular topic. Today's program, we're going to have some fun, I think, and we're also going to enjoy ourselves, learn something as well. We have in studio a resident locally here on Central Coast, Peter Almos, and he is here to share with us about the Chumash Indians, the tribe. We've had an opportunity in the past to talk about the magic, as I termed it, whether you're talking about the medicine men of Native Americans or what have you. Peter, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Doctor. Good morning to you. Good morning to all of your listeners.
This is an area we've had many guests on the program talking about their various religious affiliations, the traditions, or the rituals, and so forth. And I'd like to talk about that as well. In terms of, obviously, it's going to come across as the stories, which is a very large part. Matter of fact, many of our guests have talked about the importance of telling stories or of the story of, and whatever them. I have stories about my family growing up, as well as my immediate family that I have now. I know that you as well. But in terms of the indigenous peoples of the North American continent, as I'll term it at this particular point, so there's no confusion. And we have the same kinds of stories of the indigenous people, say, of Australia or of whatever land that you want to talk about. It seems as though there is a greater connection to understanding of and synchronistic operation or operating with nature by the indigenous peoples, as opposed to, I'll use the term, the immigrants, of which I would be considered one. At least I'm an ancestor of immigrants. Let's kind of start there in terms of maybe starting to formulate the story. Where can, as far as you know, where did or do the Chumash originate from?
Okay, that's a very good question, and I get that a lot from people. And there are actually two answers. There is the answer that is handed down, for lack of a better word, mythologically, through the telling of our culture. And then there is the scientific probability of where this group of people originated from, where we evolved from. And in my finding, the most probable physical evolution of the Chumash people, believe it or not, began in Taiwan. The people of Taiwan in ancient times, it was not called Taiwan at that time, it was called Asia. it's a very odd name, like Asia Pithecus or Asia Neanderthal. It's a very odd name, and I'll think of it before time is up here. But those people migrated from that landmass and became what are today's island-type people. They are the modern Hawaiians. They are the modern Samoans. They are the modern Chumash. They are the modern Polynesians. This is what these people grew to be from that time. And through their migratory process, if we watched Thor Heyerdahl on the Kon-Tiki, prove that ancient peoples could easily sail vast distances over the sea. Not to take away from the Bering Strait theory, which I believe did happen. I also believe that humans said, let's go out over the sea. I mean, they had enough knowledge of the stars and of weather patterns and of construction, you know, those various cultures, that they had the wherewithal to do it. So I believe that, in my opinion, is where we physically, in the greatest scientific probability, could have arrived where we are today from there. In our teaching, however, it is said that we, and this is backed by science now, and I'll explain, that we were planted on the islands as seeds, and that a deity named Shinishini blew life into the Chumash people. In our teachings, we say we do come from the stars, like many other cultures say they come from the Pleiades galaxy, and I can talk more about that later. And so we talk about star people and star things and things in the sky and how we may have arrived here. And we say that we were planted on the island as seeds from the stars. Latest scientific finding is that had comets not landed on this planet and brought with them elements from other areas, that life probably would not have began on this planet. And so the ancient Chumash teaching follows right in line with modern scientific discovery, that we come from somewhere else. We come from another place. We're put here very specially. And that is another story of why the Chumash came late and why we're a special, why we have a special assignment. Because you had said something about why indigenous people have this great connection with the earth. Mm-hmm. And it is because it's not so much the indigenous people and what we do as far as magic or medicine. It's the place where we find ourselves, more specifically here in Santa Barbara. This is a great, great vortex of amazing energy. The Chumash people are merely the ones who received the key and to be keepers of this area. Mm. All cultures have an indigenous assignment in native teaching. For instance, the white person was given the gift of fire, given the knowledge of fire, and told to carry that fire through time. The yellow person was given the gift of air. You notice a lot of ceremony in Asia is air, a lot of breathing, a lot of air. How a tiny little Asian person can punch his fist through a giant piece of wood, you know, it's through his chi or his ki. Mm-hmm. He generates that through his breathing. The African people were given the task of water. A lot of the African ceremony is water ceremony because they know what to do with the tiniest amount of water. And then, of course, the native or the red people were given the assignment of the earth and all things that are earth-like, including plant medicine, crystal medicine, magic, the magic we spoke of, mm-hmm. and so on. Yeah. I know that's a very long answer to an easy question.
My wife, I think, actually raises probably the best valid point that I can say is quite logical in its conclusion that we are not indigenous to the planet. When you take a look at all the species that exist on the planet of animals, mm-hmm. every single one, for example, you do not see polar bears on the equator and you don't see iguanas at the poles. Each species of animal has found or has been placed in or has mm-hmm. grown up in an environment where they don't have to build stuff. They don't have to find other things to clothe themselves mm-hmm. and protect themselves. They are naturally adept and adapted for the region in which they live. Mm-hmm. The only species on the planet that is not is man.
You're singing my song, Doctor.
He has to build structures. He has to kill other creatures in order to put on clothing, mm-hmm. especially in the early days with furs and so mm-hmm. forth. Now we've been able to, of course, you know, have crops with cottons and these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, makes sense to me. I mean, logic dictates that if you were designed, if you will, or you evolved in a particular area, and I don't necessarily agree with the whole issue of skin tone based upon the area of the world in which you lived, mm-hmm. it doesn't make a lot of sense because mm-hmm. they're finding certain races, if you will, have cropped up just mysteriously in other areas where that doesn't make any sense. How could they have?
Yeah, they should be the opposite color, maybe.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like skin tone has nothing to do with the environment in which mm-hmm. you live. It has to do with, I don't know what it has to do with, but the point is that when you start thinking about that, it's like, okay, well, if we're not indigenous to the planet, then where did we come from?
Right.
Which begs the question, why is that important? Why is it important that, and this is an area that I haven't gone into, and it looks like the year 2015 may be the year in which I investigate this area, of ourselves as a species coming from somewhere else, which implies that we are not the only beings in the universe. Mm-hmm. We have, of course, the whole unidentified flying object culture, if mm-hmm. And more so than just a culture, in our society today that is asking these questions. Mm-hmm. There's an author that we may have on the program talking about After Disclosure, which is the title of his book, talking about how the government finally comes clean. Mm-hmm. My first question is, the government's been lying to us for 50, 60 years. Mm-hmm. What makes you think that the public is going to believe the government when they say they're telling the truth?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm going to tell you right now, Peter, I'm a liar. And I am now telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's not possible.
Right.
If I'm a liar and I'm telling you the truth and the truth I'm telling you, and you get into the cyclical thing.
You could be lying about being a liar.
Exactly.
But that would make you a liar.
That's right. So we get trapped in circular.
That was
argument.
Just an example, dear listeners. That was not.
That's
we're
right.
Not disclosing our personal.
But the whole issue of defining where we're from, how does that help us define where we're going?
Exactly. It almost answers it within the question is answered within the question is that we need to go. In my opinion, the point of us being here, the point of us having this star knowledge and the ability to, like I said, having the gift of fire. In my opinion, the man, the men, the group that were given this gift to hold did not do what they were supposed to do with it. Mm. Like you had said, the animals follow their assignment. Mm-hmm. We did not.
Yeah.
We decided to make weapons and things that we could sell. And so that really was not the purpose of the gift. I believe the purpose of that gift was, had we used it correctly, starting with the Wright brothers, we would probably be exploring other galaxies, planets, wormholes, and civilizations at this point, 2014, in human evolution. But that's not the case. But I believe it is very important for us to find a way to explore other galaxies and to leave this planet. In my opinion, one of the reasons we do see extraterrestrial craft is because they're asking themselves, what's taking these people so long? They're supposed to have been off this planet by now into these other galaxies.
So I'm going to throw out this thought and have you expound on it. What happened to Richard Branson's experimental spacecraft could be looked upon as an attempt to continue the delay.
Hmm.
I'm not advocating that somebody sabotaged it, but and you can put into that whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But again, here we go again. They shut down the Apollo program. They shut mm-hmm. down the shuttle program. All we have left are trips to and from the space station. You know, if we really wanted to do it, we'd do it.
Mm-hmm. I know we have the technology.
Yeah.
We've had the technology. We've reverse engineered. We've been instructed. We on this level, you know, as regular citizenry of the planet, we say to ourselves, oh, there's no way that a group of, say, non-planetary individuals would come here and hold a seminar for our greatest scientists and tell them this is how you do this. And then us not put it into actuality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would almost find that very hard to believe just because of the teachings we've received as people on this planet. But I know that the technology exists, and why it's not being used, I mean, one could easily argue that in order to admit that Columbus did not discover America, all the history books would have to be rewritten.
Mm-hmm.
All the children would have to be retaught. And so for us to finally just jump up and say, you know, we could leave this planet anytime we wanted to, I think would cause a great stir. Why haven't we left yet? What about all the religious teachings that we've had up to this point? You know, this contradicts everything, which is why I love this show. I love this show. I was sitting in my car going through my dialogue. I said, what do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about astral projection, teleportation, telekinesis? I mean, these are all things that have existed here in Siuktun, Santa mm-hmm. Barbara, since the beginning of time.
Well, I've often made the comment that the miracles of the person of Jesus, as written about in the New Testament, were for him nothing miraculous or unusual. It's just what he did.
Right.
As it was as usual and as normal as breathing.
I agree.
And for him to be quoted as saying, these works that I do, you will also do, but greater works than these will you do. And I look around after 2,000 years and go, where are they?
Yeah.
Where are they?
Yeah.
And someone would might come out and say, well, but we're raising the dead over here. Yeah, but see, that's the old stuff. Raising the dead, that's old. That's old school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's a parlor trick.
That's a parlor trick by comparison to what he told us. And I honestly believe that part of the greater works has to do with the transforming of one's life, getting beyond a lot of the baggage that we've collected as we've grown from mm-hmm. childhood. Let's talk a little bit about that in mm-hmm. terms of the life and lifestyle of the Chumash specifically,
mm-hmm.
because that's what you know. I grew up in the Southwest. I grew up around the Hopi, the Pima, the Yavapai, mm-hmm. the Navajo, and others.
All great tribes in their own respect.
Yeah, but never really connected with them,
mm-hmm.
though my ancestry connects with Indians because my mother's side of the family is Mexican or Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
So the merging of the Spanish mm-hmm. and Indian
mm-hmm.
created that specific offshoot. I don't know what tribes
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to the life and the lifestyle and so forth of the Chumash, shall we say, in the days of old,
mm-hmm.
where they weren't gathering this baggage that we do in our modern day.
Right.
And the things that they were wanting to do and accomplish and achieve as a society, as a people.
Okay. Well, back in the day, very simple. Life was very simple. Here in this area, like I had said, it's the land that's special.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Chumash. We were just the ones given the keys. And as an example with yourself and the listeners who are out there who have been here generationally, who have had these phenomenal experiences through dreams or in your waking time, this is the land contacting you. This is the land and the medicine and the quote-unquote magic that's here that is assimilating itself to the citizenry here who are aware of it, such as yourself. That's why you still have this great affinity and this curiosity and this passion. It's called ancient memory. Everybody's got it. The ancient memory will come back if we try to remember. It is just that we have to try to remember through the modern Western teachings of these things are not possible. That's not possible. In ancient Chumashia, we didn't have that. We didn't have anyone telling us something was not possible because our medicine people, they were called Gantap. They were the shaman of the area, and each village had one or more shaman because there were many modalities of healing being practiced. But I'll just speak of the shamanism where we're talking maybe there's a special herb, maybe there's special crystals, special tools, special words to be said, and only special people could do these special ceremonies, right? The shaman.
Mm-hmm.
So the Gantap, the shaman, had their own little group. And all they did was they'd wake up in the morning and they'd go into ceremony. They'd go into ceremony, prayer, offering, song, dance, whatever they had to do. That was their job. They did that all day, every day, as was necessary. Okay? The rest of the tribe supported them. So when I got up and I made arrowheads for trade and barter, it was so that I could make sure that our medicine people were well taken care of. And since this was the land of plenty, there was always plenty to go around. So my medicine people were well taken care of. And myself, say, as an arrowhead maker or just a shaft maker or just a cordage maker, I was self-supported. And I knew that my spiritual is metaphysical the correct word?
Mm-hmm.
The metaphysical
mm-hmm.
world around me was in balance and taken care of because I've taken care of my shaman. The shaman is now taking care of the group. So we didn't have a lot of the new teachings mm-hmm. of modern Western America
yeah.
that say you can't hear voices, you can't see images, you can't astrally project. Dreams are only your subconscious mind processing your daily thoughts, when in reality, this is a whole another reality we should be aware of.
Yeah.
So life was easy. That's my whole point.
You know, my limited experience.
Mine too.
When I would attend certain events put on by what was called the Deer Tribe in Phoenix, we were asked to bring offerings, and those offerings were to be tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't to be the regular cigarettes off of the shelf in the local convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go to a tobacco store
Wow. To
purchase, and it was still a box, a pack of cigarettes, but they were unfiltered.
Mm.
They were not wrapped with the same kind of paper mm-hmm. that was chemically treated,
mm-hmm.
and the tobacco was pure tobacco.
Yeah.
I mean, when you breathed in when you took a whiff of the tobacco
yeah.
from the box,
yeah.
it didn't have a lot of the chemically smell
yeah.
that you get from a lot of the name brand stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And these were things that were offered to
great offerings.
The offered to the people, or whether it was the medicine people. I participated in a sweat lodge once,
mm-hmm.
and you had an individual who I probably would prefer to have been the fireman who stoked the fire outside
mm-hmm.
to bring the hot rocks in to put in the center.
He's the most important person at your sweat,
yeah,
by the way.
He also was outside the sweat.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was inside participating,
right.
and I was physically not able to make it through to the end. And at first, I've really felt very badly about that, because it was one of those things where if you're going to climb Mount Everest, you're going to go all that distance and you're only going to go halfway.
Hmm.
That's kind of how I felt. But they certainly let me know that there was no shame in leaving early.
Right.
And that if you physically can't stay, then you shouldn't stay, because
mm-hmm.
you then run the risk of physically injuring yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an interesting, and I'm glad I had the experience.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that with most all of the tribes that I have come in contact with, even on a limited basis, every single one of the individuals that I have spoken with and that I've had interaction with has always been, regardless of tribe, a very soft and gentle soul, an essence. There are many times where, growing up, born and raised Catholic, I can usually tell when I come across someone who has been born and raised in the Catholic way. There's something about them that sort of exudes
really?
That. And it's the same thing with the natives, the indigenous peoples of the various tribes.
Mm.
They have that softness about them.
Yeah.
And again, in addition, of course, certainly the physical appearance, you can usually tell.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have to say that as time has gone on, Peter, it is becoming more and more difficult to distinguish an individual's nationality because of the mixing, the
yeah.
incredible
yeah.
diverse mixing of the various races
mm-hmm.
on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was watching a program where a gentleman from Scotland was giving a report, and he looked as though he was from the Middle East.
Wow.
But he had a Scottish accent.
Wow.
With dark hair and dark skin,
yeah.
and I'm going, wow, that, for me, at
yeah.
that moment, that was different.
Yeah.
But it just said to me, look at the diversity. There
He's
are
channeling.
Two people. There, well, maybe so. But there were two people, obviously, a Scotsman or a
wow.
Scotswoman, and someone from India or
mm-hmm.
Pakistan or Israel or wherever, who got together and created this child.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always had problems in that regard. Whenever they would talk about the Israelis and the Palestinians, I couldn't tell them apart.
Yeah.
If you put them in a lineup, I couldn't tell you who was who.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I always wondered how in the world they could tell each other apart and know who to kill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the Asians.
Yeah.
Whether it was Chinese, Japanese, North Korean,
yeah.
South Korean.
I have a pretty good eye for Asian
Taiwanese.
People.
Vietnamese, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And
mm-hmm.
I know that there are subtleties.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're around those subtleties,
mm-hmm.
you pick up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But for me,
mm-hmm.
I it would be very difficult mm-hmm. for me to tell.
Well, the beauty of so many people being mixed with Native American blood is that we as Native Americans need that, I'll use the word power. Well, we need that power, that energy as Native people. And I say this to anybody who maybe your great, great, great-grandmother was 1/16th Chippewa. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And you are now saying to yourself, regardless of what you look like, or maybe you don't look quintessentially Native American, but one says to themselves, I have the heart of an Indian. I have a heart for Native America. And again, I use you as an example, right? It is needed, it is good, and it is encouraged by me. And I speak, when I speak with authority, and I speak from a very good spiritual Native foundation. And I say to people, if that is the way your heart is telling you to lean, I follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that energy is necessary. And if we want to specify, just here in Siuktun, in Santa Barbara, the land is the special place. And this special place, this special vortex of spiritual energy, because it is the gateway to Shami Laksha, the other side, the land of the dead. As many peoples, Native or otherwise, are focused or aware, let me just use aware, that way there's no effort. Just be aware of where you are, what the land is initially for, all the ceremony that's taken place here in the at least 13,000 years of scientific discovery. There have been shaman on this land practicing shamanism, as is witnessed by the over 300 painted caves in the backcountry, plus the numerous other caves that are not in our backcountry but are in the land of the ancient Chumash, all the artifacts that have been discovered, which we can talk about on a later date or later today, artifacts that would crack the planet if they were used incorrectly, artifacts that would cause tidal waves and rain or drought or things like that. These are all stories that have been told to me by, you know, valid medicine people. So the more people we have thinking along the lines of where we are and what this land is for and how special it is, the more it heals this land and the more it heals the people on this land. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the things I wanted to talk about the other day, was that one of the secrets of the medicine of this land is that at any given time, a Chumash person is thinking of another Chumash person who's thinking of other Chumash people.
Mm-hmm.
And that mental web creates a living energy, which then connects all the people here to the land, and it creates a harmony amongst the humans and the land here. And this simple harmony is one of the keys to the happiness of the ancient Chumash people. We give to the land spiritually, the land gives back to us materialistically.
When we come back from our break, we're going to talk more about some of these tools that you speak of.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'd like to talk about the Chumash shamans or medicine men or women.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to talk about the tribe and where we can find it, as opposed to what we hear about on radio and TV as far as the casinos, which seem to be, I find it fascinating. It seemed to be a big contention with, I'll say, the non-Indian, non-indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big brouhaha that opened up in Phoenix in Arizona, where there were people that were upset that certain tribe was going to get a compact with the governor. You know, and I was interviewing a gentleman about this, and I asked him, "All right, let's just say they can't gamble. We'll take that off the table. They've been placed on these reservations. They've been given this land. So my question is, what can they do? What can they do to earn money?"
Okay.
Silence. No answer. There was no answer. And if, to put it in the simplest terms, if the white man is stupid enough to go onto the Indian reservations and throw away his money at the casinos, well, whose fault is that? The natives? No. If you have that discretionary income and you want to go to the casinos and have a good time and enjoy yourself and have a meal, that's your business. But if these people have found a way to generate monies to support themselves, then and they've hit the jackpot, why should you begrudge them that?
Yeah.
It's not like they're taking a piece of the pie. Yeah.
They're actually following the rules that were laid down for them.
Yeah, exactly.
But it goes back to the question, what can we do?
What can, yeah. because as
I only do so many rain dances.
Well, that's true, and I remember a great line from the one man play James Whitmore playing Will Rogers. He said that the Indians initially they were given they were put on the reservations, and they were basically the contract read, "You may live here as long as the grass grows and the water flows."
Right.
Of course, that all changed. Now the grass doesn't grow and the water doesn't flow.
Right.
So what else are they supposed to do? So it's just it's an unfortunate dichotomy as I see it. We're going to come back and talk more with Peter Almos. We're talking about the Chumash Indians of the Santa Barbara County area, and we're going to talk more with him in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story: New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're here with Peter Almos, and we're talking about the indigenous peoples of the Santa Barbara County area, Santa Barbara specifically, the Chumash. And I'm curious, Peter, as to where one would find the greatest concentration of a Chumash in Santa Barbara, the Santa Barbara County area, in terms of either a reservation, a lands that were set aside, or if the concentration is spread about.
Well, all of those probabilities are fact. The greatest concentration one could see on a day trip, of course, would be to the reservation. They live up there. There's a bunch of, they're called the Somala Band of the Chumash Indians. We all originated from here, from the coast, from the island area. Even further back, between the islands and where the shore is now, when this land was in the grip of an ice age, that was all village down in the channel.
Oh.
What is today the channel was village.
Okay.
So we all originated here. We have the Somala Band of Chumash Indians who live in Santa Ynez, California, and there, of course, is the largest contingency of Chumash Indians locally. On the coast, I believe that in Santa Ynez there are at least 1,500 to 2,000. On the coast here, there's probably another 25 to 3,000 Chumash Indians.
Okay.
And might not recognize them all because we don't all look exactly Chumash. You know, we have a mixture like you had talked about. I happen to be Chumash and Yaqui. My grandfather is Yaqui Indian from today's Sonora, Mexico. Mm-hmm. My mother was also Chumash and Yaqui. There was a great work exchange back in the early 1900s, the late 1800s. So a lot of people came here. A lot of Indians came here to work. A lot of Indians from here went somewhere else to work, and those intermarriages occurred. We, as far as anybody just rolling into town and saying, hey, you know what, I sure would like to go see some Chumash Indians. This is one of the things that really ticks my hide, is that there is no contingency of the local Chumash, these ancient peoples, the very first peoples of the Americas. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that Native Americans were here first, but who was first amongst the Native Americans? The Chumash were here first.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the most ancient paleo peoples in North America. And I would really be overjoyed if there were a place where people could come here and say, hey, look, real Indians, you know. And often I know folks see me around town during certain events, and I'll be in my coyote regalia, and I hear all the time little kids ask their parents, Mom, is that a real Indian?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the parents sometimes say yes, and sometimes they have to ask, are you a real Indian? And I say, yes. Can you believe it?
But you're not necessarily looking for some kind of amusement center.
No.
You'd be looking
more... It would
more
be educational. Yeah.
Educational, similar to what we have down south of us where we're sitting now, the Presidio.
Mm-hmm.
And down on Canon Perdido.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Where people can go and they can see these adobe structures and the various artifacts and so forth of the Spanish influence here. Mm-hmm. On the Central Coast.
And I would not be opposed to doing a little faux city, a little faux village somewhere, you know, that's not being used. There's land up there by the mission that they're not using.
Yeah.
You know, there's over by the El Presidio, like you had said. There's little open space.
Now, you talked about the various caves, painted caves, mm-hmm. and there's an area up in the mountains called Painted Cave.
Correct.
And it's just a region, but it has nothing to do specifically with the painted caves, even though there is a cave with paintings on the walls, which I have seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have that fenced off now to try to eliminate any further damage and or graffiti to it.
Right.
You talked about this area being an energy center, and mm-hmm. I'm familiar with an area in Arizona called Sedona. With multiple vortices mm-hmm. there.
Good example.
Are there specific locations, and whether you choose to reveal them or not, I don't know, here on the Central Coast where people can go to either experience or to, so to speak, utilize those energies, for rejuvenation of self and soul mm-hmm. And so forth?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question.
Those types of things.
And the answer is yes. There are many specific spots, most of them were created by individuals who did not mark them. Okay? So the individual would go, and I've had many people come up to me and say, Pete, I found a spot that when I stand in the center of it, wow, it really turns me on.
Right.
And so I'd go there and I'd stand in the center of it and say, wow, I'm not really turned on. So that means this spot is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
This spot was created and it is in tune with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you use it. Some of the spots that I know would work for everybody, I would rather not point out, just because they're very sensitive spots.
Right.
It's not that I'm trying to keep anyone from being healed or gaining any of this wonderful energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that to minimize damage to the spot, because things were left behind by the ancient peoples that are still there, that I would hope that nobody would pick up and take with them after their wonderful spiritual experience.
Right.
You know, so it was
right.
As a memento, let me take this with me. But to say this, because the ancient shaman and some modern shamans still have used crystal on this land, and when I say crystal, I don't mean the little crystals we hang off of our necks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean crystals that take several people to carry, big crystals.
Yeah, I've seen some of them.
The islands are fraught with geodes. The entire Santa Barbara is surrounded by geodes and crystals that formed here naturally. pardon me. So I think I need more coffee, doctor. It's the only thing that'll cure this. The entire area is a vibrating crystalline circle,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So anywhere we go, it is the awareness. This is the key. I'm giving a gift here to people who are listening. If you're listening, and you hear me say to you, be aware of where you are. You are here in Siuktun. You are here in the land where layers upon layers of shaman have been buried. And I'm not talking practicing shaman. I'm not talking amateur shaman. These were powerful shaman. And there was one more group of shaman who, in the closest word we have to describe them, is wizard. So these are people that even the shaman would look at and say, how did they do that? Or
yeah.
I can't do that. Or I wouldn't do that. I don't have the experience. This is that place. This is the place where over 10,000 years of these crystals, I got a crystal, my family's got a crystal, new crystals have come in through trade or discovery. So we've got these mountains of crystals. We've got these other articles called Gatishwinik. They are the little magical, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a piece of stone, could be a bone of an ancestor, could be something like that. They're called gatishwin, just little handheld articles of power, of shamanic power that the shaman would use amongst their tools. Those things are buried all over the place. I mean, we are sitting on top of just an engine of shamanic power. The awareness of that then starts to create our tuning into that power. Just the awareness of it is
mm-hmm.
the start. Now that I know it's below me
yeah.
and around me, I'm walking through it, that causes a change. Physiological, spiritual, mental, emotional, that's the beginning. So my point is, and I tell people who come here, I've had whole families arguing on State Street, and when I'm done, after 2 minutes of talking to them, they're crying, hugging, and it's done. And that is, the entire land is powerful. The entire land is here for your healing. Come here, let go of whatever you don't want, and receive, because many good prayers have been said here before we got here. Receive the prayers and the medicine that's in the land. Take it in mime and mock mime. Grab it off the ground, put it on your shoulders. And I know it may sound silly, but I'm telling you, it works.
Yeah.
It's the awareness of the power that's here. So you don't have to go to a specific spot. We don't have to hike into the backwoods. We can go to the beach. You can go anywhere. You can go to Burton's Mound. Yeah. You know, that's why there's nothing there now, where they put the Potter Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I see.
That's why, and twice. They tried to put something there twice, and twice the land said, nothing can be here because this is a very powerful spot.
Years ago, I used to try to find, I think about, where could I go to get away from everybody? Where could I find this one spot, this one secluded space and place? And I thought, well, okay.
That's
and I started thinking
now.
About, well, but here was the catch. If I actually was able to find that one spot, that one place that I could go that was secluded. Now we're talking of the physical material world here. Mm-hmm. If I could find it, then so could others.
Yeah.
So there is no real external secluded space or place that I can go to. There is no one spot, vortices, a rock mound, and so forth, that is necessary for me to go to. As you say, it's all around us already. I want to talk a little bit about the prophecies of the Chumash. And
excuse me.
About what your perceptions are in relation to our present and future. As people of the human race, especially here on the Central Coast. Certainly, as we speak, it's very unlikely that when this program is being heard that our drought is going to be over. We're not going to receive that much rain in such a short amount of time that, oh, we're fine now, because there are cycles, you know. And I'm reading headlines that this is the worst drought that this area has ever seen. Now, when they say that, you've got to take into context, probably in the context of as long as there have been humans residing along this place, and they've been keeping records.
Right.
Even though I know they can do the whole, like they do up north, they will...
You look at tree rings.
Yeah, exactly, and that kind of thing. You can see those kinds of things.
Core samples.
And I know a lot of people are getting very concerned.
Yes.
You know, wells are going dry. People are getting very concerned about the lake and its level and so forth. But at the same time, and I was doing some searching on the internet about the cycles, and I saw a very deep drought, of course, in the 30s, obviously the Dust Bowl. Mm-hmm. There was another one I believe I saw in the 50s. Wasn't as deep as the 30s. There was another one that was not as deep as the 50s in the late 80s, 85 to 91. And so forth and so on. It almost looks as though they're becoming less and less, but they're still happening. And that's just part of the process. Mm-hmm. And that's just one aspect in terms of what I'd like for you to talk about in terms of what messages have been left for us by the Chumash. Is that part of the tradition, the oral tradition, that is passed down in terms of those stories, in terms of those prophecies? And if so, what might those be that we might look to for solace, but also as a warning saying, hey, take heed, be aware, be conscious?
There is a... I am not privy to many Chumash prophecies as far as what was said concerning this time in humanity. The prophecies I've heard were from the ancient ones to the ones who, what we consider now, all long gone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was like my great-great-grandfather talking to my great-grandfather.
Right.
Prophesizing to him. One of our major prophecies was, of course, amongst the Chumash people, was to denounce Christianity and return to our old ways. And the importance of that was for the balance of this land that I had spoken of earlier, that we're not special, we just have the keys.
Right.
And that is important for us to return to our indigenous way of life so that we can be the keeper of the keys. within our prophecies, I have heard said that we will see this culture fall in our lifetimes. We will see the Western culture come and go within our lives. And just saying that almost brings me to tears. It's so scary. But as we look, we see that we are on the cusp of failure, of great failure, as a race of humans. We have, in only a few hundred years, taken what was cared for many, many thousands of years, and we have pretty much destroyed it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Santa Barbara should be the last place in America that is experiencing these difficulties, because we are a special place. We are a very, very special land. We're very self-correcting. And so these things like drought and any other things that may go on that are natural occurrences will correct themselves.
Yeah.
But here in Siuktun, because like I had said, this is a very, very special place. All that is required is very simple. I know people are going to go, oh, hogwash. All that's required for this place to thrive, for Santa Barbara to thrive, is for those people of the mentality, yourself, myself, and the many, many myriad of guests that come on and speak about these things, is for our awareness to be expressed to others, and others to become aware of that, you know what, this is a very special place. It's the people that make it special. It is our spiritual energy that keeps the spiritual energy of Santa Barbara alive. And the ancient ones put their tools in place all around Santa Barbara. Many of them have been dug up, but there are still many of them still buried, and they're still working. And all that's required is our shumashness to be aware of them. As far as any messages that were of prophecy type, the only one that I can really remember is, and I don't want this to sound funny, it is remember the Chumash, but it's not to remember us by name or face, but to remember what we do here as people, what we've done here, and why that was our assignment. Because now that we're almost gone, it's your assignment.
Yeah.
And if
we're passing it on to you.
Right. And if the new people here, you are the new Chumash people. We're only Chumash by name because we're the natives who ran around barefoot here. The next people to run around here will be the new Chumash. And that is the people listening, the people with interest, the people who become aware of what we are talking about right now on the radio. And it's going to be up to those folks to pick up that gauntlet, which is the awareness of where we are, the awareness that this is a land of great medicine. And all you folks out there that are practicing healing modality, if you turn your spiritual radio to Chumash 1290, I'm telling you, whatever you're trying to do will work.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of tuning it to Chumashness.
Yeah.
The problem is a lot of people come here and they say, well, I am great in my own right.
Right.
I can conjure and call and soul retrieve, and I can do all kinds of great things by myself. I don't need to tune my spiritual radio to the land I'm on. But my point is, if one did do that, a great healer like, you know, that professed to be a great healer, if you did tune your spiritual radio to Chumash 1290, what a difference it would create.
I know the feeling that I get from time to time in talking with other people in my industry about different things, different ways of doing certain things. And one of the things that I have found is that, number one, I didn't get here on my own. I'm here, and I'm by myself essentially doing what I do, but there are a lot of other people that played a part, had a role in getting me to this point. And so for someone who is practicing, who is using the energies of the universe to do the various things that they do, to say take that kind of a position, I think they need to maybe rethink that just a little bit, because the energy is not yours. You are the energy. You are part of the energy. You are the energy, but you're a conduit thereof too. And so for someone to be offering you the opportunity to tap into, if you will, or tune into that greater frequency. I mean, what a gift and what a boon to both yourself as well as to this area mm-hmm. and to people at large. I know that that's what people are looking for these days. I mean, some people are looking for a quick answer, and that's not going to mm-hmm. happen. But when you talk about the end of Western civilization as we know it, shall we say, as one of our guests, Barbara Marks Hubbard, would say, that with every death there is a birth. Mm-hmm. And even in the birthing process, there are birth pangs. And that's what we're going through. So whether it's the end of something and the birthing of something new, that's just the process. That is just the process that's going on. And I even take umbrage with people who advocate, you know, the continuation of the way things are and say, well, but who said that this was the only way to live?
Right.
I mean, who said? I mean, there will, you know, some people will start spouting off, oh, we don't want to do socialism or communism. Yeah, but those aren't the only other isms that there are in the world. There are indigenous tribes around the planet who have lived and thrived for thousands of years under their ism, whatever we want to call it, Chumashism or right. Navajoism or what, you know, whatever that happens to be. I'd like to discuss the spiritual aspects of the Chumash, and maybe more specifically the story, if there is a story that speaks to the origin of the universe and or the Chumash people and or their purpose for living and so forth, which you've sort of addressed some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But shall we say, what is the Chumash creation story?
Well, in our creation story, there are three worlds. We have an upper world, a lower world, and a middle world. We live on the middle world. The lower world is full of malevolent beings. The upper world is home to the sky people. That's what we call them. Before the Chumash people came here, though, this world was home to the sky people, meaning those people from somewhere else, and we believe the Pleiades galaxy, came down here, and they lived here. And they lived here amongst the Paleo-Neanderthalithic humans that lived here. They did not interfere with them, but they were here amongst them. So I don't know if in science they say, yes, there were Neanderthals, and there was someone else living here, or maybe they say there were several types of Neanderthals living here. But there were those Paleo peoples living here specifically, on the California coast during one of the last ice ages, just the most recent one, which was between 13 and 10,000 years ago, the ice finally melted. So those people were living here, these non-Chumash people. And then the ice melted. And it says in our teachings that everyone who was here, these Paleo-Indian peoples, all perished except for one. His name was Makutikuk, which means woodpecker. Woodpecker was saved by the star people, and I have no idea why they're also known as the Council of Creators, why the Council of Creators would save one person from an old culture if they're going to put a new group in their place, because that's what they were planning on doing, and that's what they did. But they saved Makutikuk, and they gave him three pieces of knowledge. One was about food, and I don't know what the other two were about, but he was given the task of keeping food for his people. How he did it, I have no idea, because all his people were gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I also have a theory that the Arlington Springs man that they found out on Santa Rosa Island, that says it was the oldest human in North America, was Makutikuk.
Mm.
So they found Makutikuk on the islands. So it says that everyone that was living in the channel out there perished. And I don't know if perished means died, but they were gone. I don't think the ice melted so fast that it caught them down in the channel. I think they just migrated up onto the islands and up onto the mainland, okay? But it says in our teachings that they all perished and that the Council of Creators wanted to repopulate this middle world with someone. So they chose the Chumash people. And they said, we're going to create the Chumash people. So they went to the tallest mountain in Ventura, to this crystal table that either they took with them or no one has found, sitting on top of that mountain. And they had a discussion as to what we would look like, what we would be like. And so Schnellimun, who is the great sky coyote, said they're going to look like him. And so Schnellimun went to place his hand on this crystal table to start that general impression of what humans would look like, because whatever touched this table would manifest. But before he could do that, Onokok, the lizard, who is considered a malevolent being from the underworld, ran up and put his lizard hand on that crystal table. And now this is why humans, or the Chumash, have hands like we do, mm-hmm. like Onokok, the lizard. But I find that very odd. He is a lizard, or he's the reptilian mind of humans, and he's also from the underworld. And so this is what the Chumash people look like now. So I found that very interesting, that even that long ago, the Chumash were aware of our reptilian, the reptilian mind, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Have you heard mm-hmm. that?
I have.
Yeah.
I have.
I don't know too much about it. Yeah. But I've told that story to people, like, what? The reptilian mind? And someone explained it to me. So that's how we say we came into being, is that we were made by this council of creators.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that there are two types of people on the planet, and one of them is of that reptilian mind, or the reptile aspect. Honestly, I'm not recalling now off the top of my head the others. I have heard I've heard it said that, you know, we are all made of star stuff.
Mm-hmm. We absolutely
in that
are.
That wonderful new Cosmos series, mm-hmm. He talks about it time and time again. And that's where it all comes from, you know.
We absolutely are made of star stuff. Yeah. There's only, when we look at the periodic table of elements, there's only, I think, like 98 or 99 or 100 natural elements, and then maybe another 10 man-made ones. And so the guys that were doing the documentary said, we are going to have to go, we're going to have to evolve another 100,000 years with these elements that we have before we can mix them and make new elements that we are totally unaware of. But as we sit now, everything in the known universe is made from this periodic table.
Right. Which I memorized in eighth grade.
Wow. Go ahead. You want to shoot him off?
Not a chance. I don't even remember it. But
eat up the last few minutes of the show.
take a whole lot longer than that. This has been fascinating. One other aspect I'm curious. Obviously, when we talk about rituals, we talk about ceremony and tradition in all cultures. It exists. And, of course, we have various holidays that we celebrate, whether it be a birth, a mm-hmm. birthday, mm-hmm. whether it be the anniversary of the joining of two people, whether it be any other moment in time. I'm curious as to whether there was, and this will be the last part of our program here.
Oh, man.
I'm curious. We'll have to do this again.
I guarantee
you we will.
You're going to have to advocate for some more time.
Is there a ritual and a ceremony that is conducted that takes both the male and the female from childhood into adulthood, as we are very much aware of, exists within the Jewish mm-hmm. tradition.
Mm-hmm. So you're asking, we have Chumash bar mitzvahs and
kinsunetas? In a manner of speaking, yes.
And the answer is yes.
Okay.
It's called the Mamoy ceremony. And when a young man or young woman, usually around 12 or 13, comes of age, they take Mamoy. I think a lot of people know it as Jimson weed, and there's a couple other colorful names for it. It's that low-lying, dark green leaf with a white trumpet plant. Grows all over the town.
Mm-hmm.
They take that, and when that is taken, the person usually drops into a three-day coma. They are accompanied by a medicine person, though, who is monitoring them, like a anesthesiologist.
Right.
And they have their vision while they're in their coma. And when they wake up, they express to the medicine person everything that they experienced. And that medicine person will tell them either a new name, a vocation for the tribe, a life's journey, or a life purpose. And you come out of it with that information. So that's our quinceañera.
And have you been through this?
I have. I've gone through it several times.
Oh, really?
Normally, in our lifetimes, as Chumash people, we'll take Mamoy three times.
Mm-hmm.
Once when we go through puberty, once when we marry, and once, which hopefully before you marry, when we choose a vocation or a job, you know. So we'll have that. And then there are other times if you, if one, as a Chumash, were to see, or anyone here, were to see somebody in the middle of a shapeshift, then you would need to take Mamoy.
Very interesting. Yeah. I'm quite intrigued. There's this documentary that I was watching some time ago, having to do with this new, well, it's not really new, but it's the awareness of it is new. DTM, I think, is how the acronym of it. Anahuasca, I believe, is what it's called.
Ayahuasca.
And what is so fascinating to me is what it brings to mind in terms of some of the readings I've done, especially of the Eastern Indian gurus and avatars and so forth, who, in one instance, one guru had one of his devotees come up and try to trick him by putting maybe LSD or something in his beverage, and there was no effect. And the guru basically knew what this individual was doing and says, the reason there's no effect is because I'm already there.
Yeah.
So it's as if these various, we'll call them hallucinogenic chemicals, substances, as we would call them, are nothing more than that gateway to that higher self in a manner of speaking. How safe it is as an individual to take, that's up to each individual to decide.
It's not safe.
Yeah.
Going into the spirit world is never a safe guarantee. Yeah. You know, it's not.
Yeah, and that's something we may talk about in a future program.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up the program, three final questions for
yes.
you.
Yes, try to go quick.
Who is Peter Olmos?
Oh, my goodness. Complicated. That's who he is. Peter Olmos is complicated. I try to be a humble man. I try to be of service to my fellows. A while back, I was telling the doctor here, I picked up the staff of the chief of my village, of Shalawa Village up there above Hammond's Meadow. That's where my family's from. And I've been given the great opportunity to perform some chiefly tasks, and I'm honored by that. But being a chief, if humbly speaking, is to be of service. So I try to be of service. I live as close to Mother Earth as I can. I'm very poor. I've taken my vows of poverty, and you know, I just try to be the best man that I can be and use all the gifts and talents that I have and try to remind people of where we are. This is a very special place. Mm. Don't forget it, because it pertains to everybody. We all live here.
Yeah.
Next question.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
As I said, I want a single-mindedness amongst the citizenry of Santa Barbara, from the top of the hill in Montecito all the way out to Goleta. I would like for us all to be aware that we are all here together in Santa Barbara. Forget about the rest of the world. Forget about all that. Just where we are now.
Mm-hmm. And who inspires you?
Man. You know, I like the question, but it kind of has a sad answer. I am inspired by all those people because I'm a veteran too. You know, I had a thank you for Veterans Day. I was telling my friends, you know what? We don't need a day to remember fallen veterans, because veterans don't forget fallen veterans. We think about that every day. And that's who inspires me. We call them Homol Moloki Wush, those ones who walked before us. All those Chumash who fell behind me so that I could pick up the flag and keep going with it. They inspire me. And I hope that when I fall, because I will, that somebody will come behind me, and you don't have to be Chumash, and pick up my flag and keep going with it. Keep this land alive. It's the land.
Yeah.
It's not us.
Peter, I want to thank you so much for joining us and educating us as well as entertaining us too. And we will have you back again throughout the year, because there is no question there is an awful lot to talk about.
That would satisfy my soul, Doctor. I appreciate you having me. Thanks for everybody for listening to
me. And how would people get in touch with you? And it's a two-part question, actually. How would people get in touch with you? But where would people go to get more information on the Chumash?
There is a site called angelfire.com. There's another site, I think if you type in Hitchhiker in Hades, I think is another one. And these two sites are, a lot of information is given to it by Cote. His name is Cote Lota. He is a medicine man. His wife is a medicine woman. And the information they put on there is great, just great information there. I can be contacted. I am Peter Olmos. I am the Coyote Dancer for the entire Chumash tribe. I can be reached at 805-804-0604. And I encourage anybody who has a question about this land, maybe something that you need clarification on, something that you dreamt while you were here or you heard about, or just something, what does that mean in Indian? Call me. Ask me. There's no stupid question. I'd be happy to answer anything.
I have to say, I had the privilege of sitting in on an interview with a couple of gals who were responsible for, or at least promoting, the first edition of a Chumash dictionary.
Oh, wonderful.
Which I thought was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the people?
Off the top of my head, no. Mm-hmm. I'd have to research the archives. But
up there in Saint Inez in the Somali, yeah. They have a fantastic language course. And, and because of John P. Harrington, the gentleman who did all his research and put a million pages in the Smithsonian, because of him, we get a little bit of our language back.
Yeah,
very difficult language. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, Peter, thank you for joining us.
You're the bomb, Doc.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next week, love to Lal.